Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Now let's face it, everyone needs insurance. So when you need to renew your cover, the on-the-grid hot tip is to give our mates at City Rural Insurance Brokers a call. City Rural have been dealing with the insurance industry for years, and they've got more than 50 years of industry experience. Need insurance for your business? They'll sort it. Are you a landlord and want to cover your rental properties or investments? They're your people. Or are you like me and need professional cover in case you say something silly on a podcast? City Rural can sort that too. They did it for me and it was super easy. The best thing of all is that City Rural are, like you and I, motorsport people. If you've watched car racing this year, you might have even seen their logo on cars like the legendary Richard Mork Super Ute, among others. They know our game and they know the people that follow it. So support the people who back our industry. And when you need to throw a new setup at your insurance cover, drop Andrew and his team at City Rural Insurance Brokers a line and they'll fix you up. Head to cityrural.au or follow the links on the racetalk.com. City Rural, better cover, better service.
Delivering all the news, the informed views, and just telling great motorsport stories since 2003. Powered by the racetalk.com. This is On the Grid.
G'day everyone and welcome to another episode of On The Grid here on mypodcasthouse.com or on the Radio Show Limited. It's RS1. Thank you for joining us. Big show coming your way today. Going to be joined by Tom Randall from Tickford Racing. Talk about his 12-hour experience with Craig Lowndes and also the Bathurst 500 last week as well. A nice finish for him on the Sunday. Tom Randall to join me in just a tick. Then Richard Carl and Mark Walker to join me. They have a chat about what's been happening in the week of motorsport, our hots and nots, all that to come right here on The Grid.
You're listening to the latest from around the motorsport world. On The Grid.
All right, joining me for a chat is a man who, well, one of the lucky ones who had a double weekend at Bathurst over the last 2 weekends. He joins us now for a chat from the Monster Castrol Racing Team, Tom Randall. First of all, did I get the team name right?
You did, but I reckon we would prefer it to be Castrol Monster. But you, yes, it is Monster Castrol, but I'm sure Castrol would like it to say Castrol Monster. But no, happy to be here and hope you're all good, Tony.
Yeah, we are. Thanks, Tom. How are you, mate? What a great way to start 2024 or start any year with 2 weekends at Bathurst.
I know. To get to race a GT3 car in an all-pro lineup alongside Cam Waters and Craig Lowndes at the 12-hour, and then the following week you're doing round one of the Supercars Championship. It's, yeah, I'm a pretty lucky guy, to be honest. So, yeah, the 12-hour, that was my first 12-hour, and it was a really cool experience. I couldn't believe, I guess, how intense the race is. So, I mean, we did have everything thrown at us from a weather point of view.
Yeah.
And, yeah, our car wasn't particularly competitive in the dry, unfortunately, but in the wet it really came alive. And I just enjoyed the weekend with the whole team, with Scotty Taylor, Ash Seawood Motorsport running the program, and then obviously with the boys Cam and Lounsey. You know, to say I got to team up with Craig is pretty cool. And and also Scotty Taylor, he's so fun to be with, but you know, he's extremely serious as well. And it was just, like I said, a lot of fun, really enjoyed it. And then I guess you had to switch into a different gear for the 500, because it's a very different type of car to drive.
Yeah, for sure.
You go from a left-hand drive GT3 with high aero, ABS, traction control, to and paddle shift as well, to right-hand drive, a lot less aero, much smaller tire, you know, sequential, no ABS, no traction control, and right-hand drive. So just trying to, you know, that first couple laps out the pits, had to sort of just remember where to place the car, because you drive to the walls there. And when you're left-hand drive, so you get that reference of where you need to be on the car, and then you go to right-hand drive, and you need to everywhere that you were close to the wall as a driver seating position, you had to sort of recalibrate your brain and remember, okay, I'm actually, you know, two meters or a meter more to the right now myself. So thankfully, didn't make contact with too many walls. You know, a couple of little grazes, but nothing too serious.
So you said it was your first 12-hour top. So take us through the driving a GT3 with aero around Bathurst. Did it get to a point where in your brain you're thinking, my God, I never thought I could do this?
I guess because I've done that race so many times in a supercar, the first lap you probably drive some corners like a supercar in terms of your entry speed. Like, for example, into the cutting, we brake before the little kink in a supercar, whereas in the GT3 car, you're still holding throttle all the way around that to keep the car settled. And first time getting the brain around that was like, whoa, okay. And then once it clicks, it's okay. And over the top, under the tree, you know, that's nearly full throttle, that corner under the tree. We're in a supercar, you're nearly all the way back off the throttle. It's amazing how planted the GT3 car is. And the tires that they run, those Pirellis, there's pretty much no deg. So the two stints that I did in the dry, well, I actually started the race, which was intense in its own way. Sure. But my first two dry stints, but when I got out of the car, I was like knackered because of how physical it was and the mental concentration from basically doing quali laps every lap, just, you know, you're just flat out every lap. Whereas the following weekend in the 500, you're driving to the tire and you need to think more about, okay, you know, if I do too many rear lockings under brakes or flare up the tires on the exits, it's going to, you know, obviously cost grip and burn the tire up. So sort of different driving styles in that sense. But yeah, it was what a car to drive around there. Well, both cars, but yeah, to drive a Merc around there and in the dark, like I can't begin to describe how challenging it is when it is pitch black and you don't have a car in front of you. It's very tricky gauging where those walls are on that first lap.
You must have a list of my questions because that was going to be my next one. Starting in the dark, we talk about muscle memory and how much athletes rely on that in regards to whatever sport they're doing. I presume a lot of that would have come straight for you, would have come to the fore for you, that muscle memory of Bathurst. It's in the dark. You're not seeing really where you're going. So it's all from what you've done in the past, isn't it?
Well, that's exactly right. And I guess the good thing was at the start of the race, I think I was behind the Lambo of David Wall, and it was actually quite easy because I just followed wherever he went. But once I got past the car, the gap to the next car was, let's say, 3 seconds maybe. So then I lost that reference. So then the first lap I did, which might have been maybe lap five or something, that was my first lap where it was properly pitch black. And that was probably the hardest lap I'd have done around that track because you're still trying to go pretty fast. Early in the race at that point on a heavy tank, you're probably doing maybe 206s or maybe like a high five on that sort of the start of the race. And yeah, there was a few times where I turned in and I had to turn away because I thought, wow, crap, you know, the wall is there. And my visor actually was, the screws were loose. So the visor kept falling down like every bump I hit. So for that whole first hour, I was trying to put the visor back up because you don't want the visor down because it's a tint. So obviously it makes it more dark than you want. So yeah, the first hour was a bit tricky. Every couple of corners having to lift the visor up. But it was like just incredible. And I think sort of maybe with about 20 minutes to go, the sun rise as you enter Skyline, it was quite blinding. One lap it wasn't there, and then the next lap there comes the sun. And it was, another challenge. But yeah, I just want to thank the team for letting me start the race. I mean, it was pretty early wake up, but it was definitely worth it.
And driving with a bloke like Craig Lowndes, I know you're very much a sponge still and very early in your career. You're still, you know, picking blokes' brains about things to do. What was it like picking Craig Lowndes' brain?
An amazing experience, really. I mean, we all just got along like a house on fire, and he was just so easy to work with. Nothing was too difficult. He was like, "Yep, no worries, I'll do that," or you know, "I'll do the lunch hour or whatever." But I think the good thing was we were all wanting the same things from the car, which made life a lot easier for all of us. Unfortunately, we didn't ultimately have the speed that we probably wanted or needed, but in terms of working with him, yeah, it's no surprise he is as successful as he is. And, you know, he's had a career in racing for such a long time, and not even on the on-track stuff, but off-track, the way that he engages with the fans is, you know, something to be admired.
Mm.
And he's always got a smile on his face, even when he's annoyed. It's crazy, funny.
Isn't it?
Like, yeah, he'll be upset about something, but he's still smiling when he's upset. Like, it's pretty cool. So, but yeah, we had so much fun, and it's nice to sort of, you know, when he's positive like that, it only radiates that positivity. And I mean, I like to think I'm a reasonably positive guy. Yeah. So as a team, I think, you know, we all just radiated that positive energy, and we had so much fun as well. And that just makes you feel more relaxed and allows you to do the job better.
Sixth is, well, it's a pretty good finish. You wouldn't be too unhappy with that.
Seventh. We finished seventh.
Seventh, sorry. Okay.
Yeah. But no, to be honest, I mean, we qualified 13th, and that was like, you know, Cam was pushing pretty hard.
Yeah.
So I think if someone had told us that we were going to finish in the top seven on the lead lap, we led the most laps for a Mercedes car, which was really cool. And yeah, that the wet stints that I did and Cam did, it was really cool to have that opportunity. And I'd never driven one of those cars in the wet before. And you know, it was quite a baptism of fire trying to be put into that, you know, with a still got 5 hours of the race to go. And all right, here you go, mate. You're on, you know, set of wets, and just try and, you know, maintain the lead. But all in all, it was, yeah, super demanding mentally in the wet, but it was a lot of fun. And to be battling with Lucas Stolz there for a good 10 laps was quite nice. Yeah, hopefully I can do that race again. I really enjoyed it, and it's a great way to start the year.
So you would have gone into the following weekend for the 500 with a bit of confidence after having a great weekend at the 12 hour, and gee whiz, reality bites pretty quickly, doesn't it, sometimes? It was a tough weekend for the team.
It was, yeah. I mean, like you said, you go in after a round like that, you're like, oh yeah, like, yep, we're all good. But then you also got to think, all right, this is completely different. You know, this is Supercars Championship, super competitive, and really anything can happen. And I guess with supercars, you always want to roll out of the truck, you know, for practice one on the pace. And unfortunately, as a team, yeah, we struggled a lot on Friday, and then the wet practice session for practice two made it tricky to understand, like, validate changes we'd done. So we weren't really sure where we were at as a team. And then, yeah, unfortunately, qualifying on Saturday, we were both out of the 10, and the race was, yeah, it was tough, but I felt like we made improvements overall with the car and stuff. And I think that put us in a good spot for Sunday. And unfortunately, Cam had that spindle failure on Sunday, but the team did an amazing job getting a new one on, and he actually scored, I think, nearly 40 points, which could come in handy later on down the track. And then Sunday, yeah, it was nice to, I guess, turn it around, if you like, and get in the top 10, get in the shootout. And yeah, if someone had said we'd come away with fourth on Sunday, sort of after practice one, we'd be pretty happy. So we know there's obviously still more work to do. Top three were probably on another level on the weekend. You know, no one could really get near them in both races. So I think in the Saturday race, Richie was about sort of 20 seconds behind the leaders. And that's pretty much, and he was fourth, and that was pretty much where we were on Sunday as well. So yeah, the top three were doing some good stuff. But yeah, we just need to come out swinging at the Grand Prix. I know that's probably a very cliche saying, but I think we have a good package, and the Grand Prix is a tough one because this Thursday, you got two practice sessions, two qualies and a race. It's all very fast. So
yeah,
we just need to roll out strong, and I think that'll help. We've had quick cars there in the past, and I do really enjoy racing there. It's very European style track. I mean, it is a Formula One circuit, so I enjoy the layout. I enjoy the way you got to flow the car and set every corner up for the next one. It sort of leads onto the next corner, like a flow-on effect.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is for points, so it'd be nice to come away with some more good points.
We talk about confidence. The team in its entirety, especially your side of the garage, would have had a lot of confidence going into the end of last year. You had some great results, some podiums at the Bend. You had a podium at Adelaide, and pretty good in between there. So it was surprising to see you guys just not really find what you needed to find straight off.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to disagree with you. Yeah, we obviously wanted to come out stronger, like every team on the grid. As I said, it is extremely competitive, and I think, you know, being the hard tire as well on the weekend, we probably just underestimated what we needed from the car. But I do feel like by Sunday we definitely got on top of it, and if we, I guess there's always that in hindsight sort of thing, but I guess if we had have. It would have been nice to roll out how we finished and then fine tune it from there, but it doesn't always go that way. And yeah, every race can't be a top five result as much as you want it to be. It's just one of those things. And I just think the really cool thing is how we rebounded, because it could have been just as easy to do Sunday and finish in that top 15 again. And just, you know, it's just one of those rounds. But the fact that we were able to actually finish top four shows that, you know, we know we know what we can do, and it's just about executing. And you know, the pit stops were awesome. We were the fastest car in the lane on Sunday, which was great. So yeah, it's just about nailing all those one percenters, if you like. And I think we can be up there. And as I said before the start of the season, I really do think that when we get everything right, we can be challenging for a team championship.
Third year now, full time in supercars. How do you feel about going into 2024 now? Do you feel that you've got everything totally under control, that you've spent the last 2 years learning? You had to learn a whole new car last year, all that sort of stuff. But is that all settled now and you can just go out there and race? No, no excuses, I suppose, is what I'm saying.
Clearly, I can't believe it's 3 years. It's crazy. I think I've completed 2 full years. It's just flown by. But it's an interesting question, because, I mean, I guess the confidence levels are definitely probably higher than the other years. Like, knowing that I got the podiums and a pole position last year, I think just mentally it puts you in a better space, knowing that, yeah, you can mix it at the front. So that helps a lot. And definitely, I have a better understanding of the tire in terms of, well, A, on a quali lap, but also in terms of a race, how to bring a tire in, how to look after it. And look, these are still things that I'm gonna still improve on. I mean, there's definitely always room for improvement
Yeah,
as a
for sure.
driver, or whether it's car setup or a driver. I mean, I'd like to think I'm pretty quick to admit, you know, for example, on Sunday quali, I told the team, look, there was a few corners I just didn't nail, and I felt we had a car that could have been in that top four in qualifying. But everyone's got a story, but I was adamant that, hey, no, actually, that was just me. I just didn't do a good enough job in that spot. But in terms of racing, having raced against a lot of those guys now for a couple of years, that's good in a sense. I think the level of respect is definitely there from my competitors to myself, and likewise, which just makes the race better. I mean, look, we still will rub panels if required, but I know how they race, and they sort of know how I race, and I think you can race hard but fair. It's definitely possible. So in terms of that, you know, getting a result like that, I think it just shows again that experience that I've developed over the last couple of years has, yeah, certainly helped. But certainly would love to just be on that podium more regularly. That would be nice.
And the opportunity now is so much better than it may have been in the past as well. No
Sure.
Shane Van Gisbergen, he's gone over to America. We don't know what's happening with Brody at the moment. We do know that he won't be racing at the Australian Grand Prix. Todd's been confirmed for that race as well. So the championship is just blowing wide open.
It is, and you know, it is a shame that Brody's not on the grid. I mean, it's great for Shane doing Xfinity Series and, you know, selected cup races. I think that's great. You know, he obviously showed last year when he did that round at Chicago that he can certainly mix it with those guys and beat them at their own game straight off the bat. So in terms of where he's off to, I think that's amazing. And as for Brody, I'd love to see Brody back on the grid. Every driver would. I mean, he's the current champion, so really, he is the yardstick of, okay, this is the guy we need to beat. He's got the number one on the doors. So yeah, I'd love to see Brody back sooner rather than later in the category. And look, I'm not sure how that would work in terms of, you know, how it works with the TRCs and all that sort of stuff. That's above my pay grade, but we'd all like to see him back on the grid. You know, sponsors, fans, us drivers, the sport. But as for your question, yeah, the championship is blown wide open. I think the Triple Eights are quick, as we saw on the weekend. Chaz, no doubt, is fast. And yeah, Cam will be strong as well. I've got no doubt about that. And yeah, hopefully we can be up there. I mean, I think we're only 10 or something points off the top four, albeit it's only round one, but
yeah,
the Grand Prix being four races, you just got to be sort of strong in every race. And yeah, it'd be nice leaving there with a good haul of points. And it's just only going to help that going into Taupo next month as well.
And give the sim business a plug, mate. How's it all going there?
Dream Sim's going good. Got a Taupo model actually nearly complete for the sim. Oh, so well, that'll be good to get on it. But yeah, it's been going really good. Been doing a fair bit of prep now for Albert Park, which is only 2 weeks away. And then, yeah, we've got some really good customers and clients that, you know, are using it for their race prep, whether it's Super 2, Toyota 86, Aussie Racing Cars, Porsches, or track days, Australian GTs, all that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's been really good. Really good.
Well, great stuff, mate. Hey, congratulations. A great, as we said, 12-hour result for you. A great Sunday result for the team. And hopefully that just keeps improving now as the year goes on, mate. We'll keep a close eye on you and catch up again another time down the track.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate it.
Good on you, Tom. Tom Randall joining us right here on The Grid.
There's more great motorsport stories coming next on The Grid.
All right, joining me for the second part of the program, I say a very good day to Richard Crowell. Hello, Richard.
Well, very good day to you too, Tony Shebeki. Nice to be back.
I wasn't sure whether it was morning or afternoon or evening for whoever's listening, so we just went with the...
G'day, it works. I like it. Nice to be back. I took last week off. I'd like to say I was on a holiday in tropical Queensland. Wasn't quite that, but I'll delve into that a little bit later on in my hots and nots. But no, nice to be back. Missed the show last week. I have no idea what you talked about, but I'm looking forward to jumping in this evening. Today
and funnily enough, I think I could say, Mark Walker, that we have no idea what we spoke about either.
Oh, it's mostly slandering Richard Crail, so I'm glad you didn't listen to it, or your lawyers or anyone like that. So,
the lawyers definitely listened. I haven't, but the lawyers, they're all over it. So, yeah, just wait.
How's your week been, Mark?
Motorsport, yeah, there's hots, but it's going to be a big weekend coming up. IndyCar's back, MotoGP's back. The world is returning to motorsport.
It is. Fallout from race one of the supercar season, gentlemen. Anything we need to know about? Oh, I see that Todd is confirmed for the Grand Prix. So another miss for Brody.
Yeah, and not shocking news at all. Fully expect this to be one of the staples of the season, is that, you know, a week or two out from each round, we'll get a nice little graphic on social media from Error saying Todd Hazelwood will be driving the car this weekend. We can't talk about Brody because reasons, which are legal. So, yeah, I feel like that's going to be the way. If you're Todd Hazelwood, you're taking the ride. Well, you can get it, aren't you? Just keep rocking up, keep doing your job. It might end up winning some races at some point this year. And if you're Brody, you probably won't. That's about it, isn't it?
We broke it down on the Race Talk. We put the big sequence of events from sort of the pre-January 20th when the news broke that Brody was going to split with the team and follow the whole sequence the whole way through. And it's interesting reading to see how it unfolded very quickly. It unraveled so fast. But obviously still it's lawyers at 10 paces at the moment and there's no resolution in sight. So it's going to keep on keeping being a thing in the news.
Yep, 100%. And we head off to the AGP in a few weeks' time. A decent break for these guys after their first race.
This will be, I'm going to go out on a limb right now, this will be the last time supercars race at the GP for the foreseeable future until the GP need them again. There you go.
You could be right.
The latest, of course, being that news broke early this week that the supercars paddock will now be cut off from general admission spectators.
No.
They are, of course, moving out of the pit lane garages that the Grand Prix built for them as a demand of supercars to be there some time ago now, as it turns out. They're being bumped from the pit lane garages for Formula 2. They're going to be back out in the paddock behind what used to be the supercar pit lane for the first time. But in the way they've...
No, they're going to be... They're going to be down back over 10, 13, 14.
which is a non-GA.
Yeah, back where they were last year.
Yeah, which is a non-GA.
No, well, it was GA, but they'll rope it off.
There ain't no GA. No GA. No GA whatsoever. Only series passes and a few VIPs. So the only support category paddock that general admission punters will be able to access is Porsche. Painter Dixon Carrera Cup Australia. In its usual spot on the oval, just past the tunnel as you come in under the start-finish straight. So go and check out the Porsches, folks, because they are the only racing cars, unless you've got a paddock pass, they're the only racing cars you'll actually be able to go and see and get up close and personal with at the Grand Prix in 2 weeks' time. So I reckon that will conspire to being the straw that breaks the camel's back for supercars 100%. For not being there.
So who needs who? Does the Grand Prix need supercars? I'd say not. Does the Grand Prix need anything outside of F1? Probably not. I mean, if you just had Tony Shebeki riding a bicycle naked around Albert Park in between the F1 sessions, you probably wouldn't sell any less tickets, would you? And you wouldn't have to pay supercars to be there to be fourth fiddle on the undercard, would you?
There'd be some lawsuits with that, I would have thought.
Would there?
You're riding a push bike naked.
I don't think that'd upset too many people.
But the V8s are at the Grand Prix because they get paid to be there. It's probably one of their better earns of the year. It's in front of a big audience, big TV numbers. It's an event that's important to all the sponsors in supercars. But
GP needed supercars until F2, F3 started, and now they don't. That's just the way it is.
But they didn't even need that because they already sold the event out. Like they're selling the thing out so quickly, they don't need any help at all.
We can't become a Las Vegas and just have one category. The Aussie punters aren't going to live for that, are they?
They don't care. They watch Formula One.
Yeah, but they're not going to watch just two sessions of Formula One per day. You've got to have something in between.
Put something on, but whatever. They could save some cash and not paying supercars. You know, would this have happened 20-something years ago under the original supercars regime? You know,
well, no, because
they haven't had a lot of.
No, because
supercars just haven't had wins lately.
Where
was the last win that supercars has had?
Well, exactly. And the old regime is what got the pit lane that Formula 2 is now moving into built, because they kicked up a snot that they didn't have good enough facilities and they needed their own pit lane to do pit stop races. And now they're having that taken away from them. So without, by the looks of it, much of a fight, and there's probably not much fight they can put up. They've sort of just got to rock up and shut up. But the value proposition for going to that event just keeps diminishing and diminishing from a team point of view and from a series point of view. So there's going to be a point where the benefits of that will outweigh doing another free-to-air round somewhere else at some point, ideally in Victoria, because they probably need to be, because they've got bugger all else in the state. Whether it's at Winton or whether it's at Calder or whether it's at Phillip Island or whether it's a Geelong street race or whether it's at Avalon or whatever it might be, there's going to be a point where that's going to be a better deal for supercars and they'll make more money out of that than they will rocking up to be the fourth support category at an event that no one really gives a shit about them being at. So the value proposition isn't there. I don't think they'll be there for very long. That's just my gut feeling.
No, but that makes sense, absolute sense, that they won't be there for much longer. They're not going to cop that, surely.
No.
There was a lot of talk about last year, and they had much better facilities last year than they'll have for this year then.
Well, and even the TV proposition doesn't add up as much as it does, because they're free-to-air broadcast partner 7, and this round's on Channel 10. So even that is a struggle, because they don't get... They've got control over their Fox element, but they can't control their free-to-air element either, which they love to do, which they do very, very well. We know the supercar TV product is superb. So do you go to 7 and go, look, we're not going to go to the Grand Prix anymore, but instead of that, you know, instead of the Grand Prix being on 10, we'll go somewhere else, do our own event, and you can have that on 7. I reckon 7 would jump at that. And I'd love to see what the TV agreement is, because the deal with Fox is that there are 6 Channel 7 rounds, but I'd love to know whether, if they don't go to the Grand Prix, which is free-to-air on 10, whether that translates into getting a 7th round on the 7 network. And therefore, if you do that, you don't lose. Your free-to-air proposition doesn't change. No. It goes to a bigger network, technically, and your host free-to-air broadcaster network. So all of a sudden you make up one of the biggest things that being at the Grand Prix is, which is free-to-air TV ratings. So Fox would love it because the races would be in a better time slot in and around Formula One, outside of being in and around Formula One. So there's going to be a point where the value proposition stops being geared towards being at the Grand Prix and they'll have to make a call and do something else. The question is, what else like do now. They do?
That sounds like now. And that is it. That is the big question. Where do they go? What do they do? You're right. It'd have to be somewhere in Victoria because you take out the GP, the only other round we have is Sandown, which, as we know, may not last for too much longer.
Temporary citizen, allegedly. So, yeah, that's the million-dollar question. So, yeah. The other thing for mine, and when we probably should do this in deeper depth when we get towards the Grand Prix, is that is it just me or are they taking away the stuff that made the GP great last year, like mixed tyre races, and we're not doing that this year? Is that correct?
Well, they can't. They're not having pit stops. They can't do pit stops out of a...
Correct, exactly.
...back of a ute like they used to at the Grand Prix back in the day.
So the races are going to be potentially less good as well. So there's another argument for it because the Grand Prix races were great last year.
You reckon?
They were better than...
I mean, they
were better than the Bathurst races.
Outside of Mustangs burning to the ground, there wasn't... Well, then that Sunday morning fast was... an absolute farce. So
They're just engineering themselves out of stuff there. Anyway, it's not their fault, obviously. Like it clearly wasn't Supercar's decision to go, oh yeah, we're going to give up our pit lane in Formula 2 and then we're going to close our new paddock area.
And the great thing about it is the value proposition of the Grand Prix is diminishing anyway, to the extent that once again, we saw the first race of the season last weekend in Bahrain and it was exactly the same result that we saw in the last race of last year.
Well, but that doesn't matter, Shebex. It doesn't matter what Formula One churn up.
No, true.
Boring or whatever.
At some point, people are going to get sick of that.
Well, but will they?
Well,
like more than 100,000 people have attended race day at the Australian Grand Prix every year for the last 15 years. So, the event is still. Formula One has been through these dull periods before, and will continue to do that. And you know, aside from the peak that it's at the moment, it'll come back down and settle at a level, but it'll be a level when the Drive to Survive gloss brushes off. It'll be a level higher than it was before that. It's not going to go lower or get smaller. It just doesn't work that way. It will naturally continue to be bigger. It might just not have that massive peak that it's had for the last 3 or 4 years of the DTS factor. But Formula One's strength or weakness has no bearing on supercars being at that event. But it's funny how the event has changed because for a while there, they would bend over backwards to get supercars there. But now they're the fourth tier support category on an event with 5 categories. So something's changed. It's either
some
the
event's
changed
say
or
they're
supercars
the
changed.
Some might even say they're the fifth. Some might say the Porsche actually have a better deal this year round than supercars.
They don't though.
You
Porsche
sure?
doesn't. No. Well, no, because
if they're getting public access to their garages.
Well, yeah, but having a few punters rock up through your garages doesn't make up for a 7 o'clock Saturday race. So after qualifying, so I don't think that's a. They're definitely supercars have got a better program and free to air TV, which Porsche doesn't have either.
Yeah.
What Formula One needs, is it Red Bull to self-destruct? Because that could be an option.
Christian Horner's trying hard for that to happen. Well,
they're doing a good job at it. Let's pick that up in the hots and knots, shall we?
Oh, we're going to go to hots and knots early, I think, here. There's a lot to talk about.
I think we should.
Before that, though, IndyCars?
Yep, season back this weekend. St. Petersburg, Florida, a track where Scott McLaughlin won 2 years ago and should have won last year, but crashed with Romain Grosjean. But then a lot of people crashed with Romain Grosjean last year, so that was just starting a trend. So it's easy to expect that Scotty goes into it as one of the favourites because he has made that racetrack his own. It's going to be really competitive field, few driver changes. I think it's going to be a quite good weekend for IndyCar racing and... it's always hugely competitive. It's always pretty racy. It's a paint too. It's a good place to start the year. Looking forward to that with our boys, Scotty in the mix and Will Powers in the mix and Scott Dixon, despite being 137 years old now, will continue to be in the mix and still be a championship contender, because that's what Scott Dixon does. Yeah, that's going to be very, very competitive racing. Looking forward to it.
Well, the heir apparent to Scott Dixon, Callum Hedge, there you go, starting in Indy next. So he could be the next in line when Scott Dixon retires in 2032.
Yep. Yep, yep, that's going to be good. Indy next is another quite quality field, so that's become a really strong development category for IndyCar racing. So that'll be worth watching to see how young Chedgy goes. He's a great talent, Callum. I'm fortunate to work with him last year. He's quite quirky individual, very, very fast guy. Was pretty good in Formula Regional New Zealand, or Oceania as it is. And yeah, it gives us another good storyline to follow in Indy Lex, like we were Hunter McIlroy last year.
What is Hunter doing this year?
Hunter's racing in IMSA competition, Shebex.
There you go.
Mm. Yep. Getting paid to race cars. Living the dream.
Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be nice? Well, any NASCAR we need to talk about, Mark?
Well, yeah, there was the double header in Las Vegas with the NRL. I thought that was very nicely played out there. You couldn't do that if you tried.
Las Vegas has been the home of sport in the last 3 or 4 weeks, hasn't it?
Hasn't it?
Everything's been there.
They actually did a reasonable level of NRL NASCAR crossover. A few of the drivers were there. I saw Scotty McLaughlin was there, Ryan Blaney, Coralie Joyce. So there was a bit of cross promo going there. So whatever boffins in NRL headquarters, they did a good job getting those guys back engaged. Van Gisbergen, shocking weekend. Everything that could go wrong did go wrong, and he blew a motor before the first stage was up in the race. So he'll roll on to Phoenix to have another go this weekend. In the main race for the Cup Series, Kyle Larson just held on from Tyler Reddick. Larson dominated, but it was a pretty close finish at the end, and Larson did just enough to hold on. 37 cars in the race, 31 cars on the lead lap after 600 Ks of racing, and there was only one retirement in the field. So pointless stats. They're a thing.
Good stats. Good stats. I like it.
All right, with thanks to nobody, it's time for our, it could be you if you want it though, it's time for our hots and knots.
Right, well, I'll kick things off. I'm going to give a hot to a world championship that last weekend was in the Middle East and produced an absolute beauty. Yes, the FIA World Endurance Championship was in Qatar, and it was outstanding. Sports car racing is going ballistic at the moment, and hugely competitive event, won by Porsche Penske Motorsport, first win for the 963 hypercar. So someone dragged up a tweet I said posted after the Le Mans 24 Hour last year, which was something along the lines of there are two brands that hate losing the most in motorsport, that's Penske and Porsche. Their revenge will be swift. And sure enough, it took exactly 6 months. So they are very much on top now, having won the Rolex 24 in IMSA competition to kick off the season. So terrific race. The debut of Alpine was there. Isotta Fraschetti was there. Lamborghini was there alongside Toyota, Porsche, Ferrari, of course, Le Mans 24 Hour winners, among all the other brands. And then the debut of GT3 as the GT class was also incredibly competitive, which also included Manti EMA Racing, who won the Bathurst 12 Hour, and Yasser Shahin, GT World Challenge Australia champion, which was cool. Yeah. So that's a massive hot. Shebex, you want to say something?
No, very good. Big hot.
Yeah, no, very good. Hot, Porsche's sticker department, because it won them the race. Midway through, the leading 963 was clobbered by a GT3 car that was being lapped, and it did enough damage to the side pod on the left-hand side of the car to take the number square and the number panel off. Now, they're illuminated by legislation in WEC racing, and if you're not allowed to run missing a number on the side of the car, especially on the outside of the racetrack where everyone's watching from. So Porsche very quickly checked their rule book, decided that, no, they needed to replace it. They had a guy called Andre ready to go with a replacement sticker. They had the location sorted on the back of the side pod, just in front of the rear wheel. And with a very quick pit stop, they peeled off into pit lane. Andre whacked the sticker on, and despite the fact that it raced with a very non-Porsche and non-Penske crease in the middle of the newly applied sticker, it absolutely helped them win, because otherwise they would have been disqualified. So well Amazing. Done to that guy, Andre, for his sticker work. Hot for you. And hot for Porsche, who not only got sweet revenge by winning the race, but they finished second and third and also won the GT class with Manti. So that's a hot.
And we will point out too that Richard Crowell is currently wearing a Porsche T-shirt while he does his hots and nots.
Chebec's ideal time. Purely in facts, not emotion. Purely in facts. And it's all factual hots.
I can't argue with that.
Here's another factual hot for you. It's a hot week if you're an optimistic Formula One fan. So I've got some stats. Mark was dealing in some stats before. Last year, Red Bull wiped the floor with everybody in the Bahrain Grand Prix. And the leading Ferrari finished the race last year 48.052 seconds behind. It was Carlos Sainz, who goes well in Bahrain. This year, Carlos was again the leading Ferrari, but finished 25.1 seconds behind Max Verstappen, which is a gain of, year to year, 0.047 a lap relative to Max Verstappen in the Red Bull. And I say Max Verstappen because I've got a knot a little bit later on.
Ferrari on the improve, is that what you're saying?
They year on year versus the Red Bull in the opening race of the season are half a second a lap better off. Now, remember last year on occasion, Ferrari were competitive. So let's not write out this season just yet as being a Max write-off. I mean, obviously it's going to be, but
we'll wait one more week.
Yeah, let's just give it a little bit of time because Ferrari are statistically, and I'm dealing in facts, remember, not emotion, statistically they are closer to Max Verstappen's Red Bull than they were 12 months ago. So that bodes well. I'm going to give a hot to all the non-racing scandal in Formula One because there's certainly not much racing going on. So it's keeping it in the news. That's good. Hot, Oscar Piastri and Fernando Alonso. Didn't they make good life choices, either not going to in the first place or getting out of Alpine? Because Alpine is the worst team in Formula One, has just sacked their technical director, and to replace them, have hired three technical directors. Isn't that just the most French way of doing things you've ever seen in your life? So
that could go wrong.
Good luck to Alpine. Well done, Oscar and Nando, for making good life choices. Hot to IndyCar being back this week. We touched on it before, and I'd like to give a special nostalgic hot to one of my favorite IndyCar teams, which is Dale Coyne Racing, because 4 days out from cars being on track at St. Pete, they're yet to confirm either of their two drivers. And anyone who's an IndyCar fan will know that that was Dale Coyne Racing. They'd be days out from the opening round, and they'd pull two drivers out of their hat or other places and be on the grid, and ironically, sometimes would be quite competitive. So I love the fact that DCR hasn't confirmed drivers. I also love the fact that as the time you listen to this podcast, they probably have now confirmed drivers because that's the way this podcast works.
It does.
Hot, Dale Coyne Racing. Hot, Bathurst 6-Hour TV. I don't know if you guys touched on it last week or I think the announcement might have came out after the podcast, that it will be on SBS. But it will also be on Fox Sports and KO. Excellent. So many, many ways to consume Bathurst's biggest enduro, which is excellent. A literal and metaphorical hot to Coolangatta, which is where I was last week at the Porsche Michelin Junior Driver Training Camp powered by BWT, which is a water brand, and they're great. 4 days in Cooley in summer. Turns out, real hot, real humid. Dehydration, definitely a thing. But hot, the bunch of Porsche juniors, and they'll all be formally announced at some point in the next week. Wowie, what a talented group of young racing car drivers. Very exciting times in front. And final hot.
Hang on, well, how did that solve dehydration?
Well, it's Porsche juniors. Just get inspired by watching young drivers do great things. Yeah.
Cool, good.
And a final, and better water technology.
Well, and BWT, obviously, keeps dehydration, obviously. I'd also like to, just on that note, if I may divest just slightly, give a little hot to what's the name of the joint, Mark? I've gone off piste here. You'd know it because I'm sure you've been there.
Is it Twin Towns?
Yeah, they're Twin Towns, the RSL, which is in New South Wales, which is when my colleague Chad Nalan and I very desperately needed to be a late on a Wednesday evening once we'd concluded the Porsche Michelin Junior powered by BWT training camp. That was the only place within several kilometres of the where we were staying down in Coolangatta that was open at that time of night on a Wednesday.
So here's the backstory to that place, why it's so large, is that back in the day when Queensland didn't have gambling, you used to have to walk across the street there to do your gambling.
Yeah, which is what we did. We walked across the street. It was outstanding. It is the first time I have crossed state lines in pursuit of a beer. Very good. But I like Coolangatta. It is the superior end of the Gold Coast Strip.
The French end of the Gold Coast.
It is the better end, I think. Mm. It is better than Surfers Paradise. That's just personal opinion. Go visit Queensland. It's lovely. And final hot, because I missed it last week because I obviously wasn't here. I'm going to give a little self-indulgent hot to Johnston Crail Racing Enterprises. We came, we saw, it didn't look like rubbish in our first ever race meeting. Performance was probably 6 out of 10, room for improvement, but pride was 1 million out of 10. Very, very pleased with our little racing debut. Exactly midfield, which is exactly where we thought we'd be, but we know where we sit now, which was great. So I now need to go and rattle the can and find some budget for the next one. So if you'd like to sponsor the TRT Power Rankings or the On The Grid Hots and Knots, I can chuck in a racing car. Good deal. Good deal. And that concludes my hots for this week.
Mark Walker.
Well, you're saying that Queensland's hot, but it sounds like also the first few metres of New South Wales are equally as hot.
Oh, yeah, that sort of 20-metre window as you cross over the border there, real hot.
So SVG continued to make a splash in the US. He was on the Stacking Pennies podcast with Corey LaJoy, and he noted that the most surprising thing about moving to America is that Talladega Nights isn't a comedy, it's a documentary. And they all agreed with him.
Yeah.
Also NASCAR things, the Full Speed show on Netflix, since that's debuted, the NASCAR Instagram account is up 258,000 followers. So obviously reaching the right demographic there of younger people who watch Netflix and are on Instagram. So good for them. And having seen a bit of it now, it's a good show.
Yeah, it is. It really is good.
Good bit of TV. It's like Denny Hamlin, he doesn't care. It's like, yeah, I'm very rich. Like, you should see my house, my plane, my helicopter, my smoking hot wife.
Yeah, my BFF, like, Michael Jordan.
BFF Michael Jordan. I've got all the hats and all the shoes, and I'm the best. It's so good. And also, one more there in NASCAR. Special mention goes to Rajah Carruth, who won the Las Vegas truck race on Friday night, becoming the third African-American to win a NASCAR race after Wendell Scott and Bubba Wallace. Raja's a young guy. He's sponsored by Rick Hendrick, and he appears to be absolutely the real deal. He's now in his fourth season of physical three-dimensional car racing out of computerized iRacing, and he's out there smoking him in NASCAR. So awesome story. Works really hard at it, and he's on the Door Bumper Clear podcast this week, and he speaks very well. So well done, Raja. Watch that name. It is going places. Well done to Matty Campbell. Pole P3. What can't he do?
Nothing.
Seriously. Not beard. I ventured along to the mini GP at Oakley over the weekend, and it's bloody brilliant. Think little motorcycles racing on a go-kart track. So 160cc bikes for 10 to 14-year-olds, 190cc's for 12 to 16-year-olds. There's a selection of support races featuring quite large adults on very small bikes, which was rather humorous, and I found that very entertaining. Sketchy, very, very bloody sketchy, borderline terrifying, but those kids can absolutely swing a motorcycle. The mini GP goes off to Cameron Park in New South Wales, Ipswich, Monarto down your way there in South Oz, and renting out the year at Todd Road.
Wow.
And on that, I always have a bit of an internal giggle when I see kids at the go-karts or the mini GP or whatever racing in the juniors with number 69. Like, yeah. What are their parents doing?
Oh,
like,
they know. They know.
Oh, they little Timmy, number 69.
They know what?
They know.
Wow. Righto. there was also a Pakenham Carnacross on the weekend. Bloody hell, that's good fun stuff. The numbers there are really quite large at the moment. A lot of people getting behind it, a lot of momentum. Check it out. Get behind your grassroots motorsport in your area. Dirty, cheap fun on a Sunday. What more could you want? Phillip Island Classic this weekend, over 400 entries, a million other cars in the outfield. Some really, really good stuff, and the race talk will be down there covering all of that. It should be quite large. The full preview and the entry lists and timetable and all that is on the racetalk.com right now. Using the word helmet as an insult, hot. I didn't know that wasn't
context,
insult,
please. But,
Daniel Ricciardo called his teammate a helmet. Or,
yeah. Of course he did.
used some other words in there as well, but he called him a helmet for
glorious
being a helmet.
Oh, wonderful.
Finally, 2 a.m. Formula One races when you wake up at 3 a.m. after a bad dream. such a good way to get back to sleep.
Good.
That very timing nice. Could not have been any better.
No hots and nots from me, boys. I've been that busy doing other stuff that I haven't had a chance to even look at it. So I'll handball over to you for your knots.
Okay, we'll put that in the knots department then. A knot to me for A, missing last week, but missing in my hots. I meant to mention the South Australian State Motor Racing Championships, which were held on the weekend at the Bend Motorsport Park. They had 162 cars, which is South Australia huge.
It's good.
But round two, this weekend at Malala Motorsport Park, under lights, twilight Saturday night, definitely going out to that. Another 85 or 90 cars running. So
fantastic.
Outstanding stuff, different categories too, which is really good. So it's a new promotion this year. The Bend has basically taken over in conjunction with the Sporting Car Club of SA. And one of the biggest comments that I've heard out of it was they got trophies for the first time, which is
excellent.
It's little 1%ers like that, isn't it? So well done to the Bend. Right, knots. Checo Perez. Come on, Checo. We need to have a conversation here, Checo, because everyone likes you, Checo, and we really want you to be good, Checo. But we really right now, Formula One fans, need you to be, Checo, the Rosberg to a Hamilton. Or a Bottas to a Hamilton, or even an Alonso back in the day to a Lewis Hamilton. We need you to be that to Max Verstappen, Checo. Oh, come on, Checo. We need you to push Max. We need him a off, little Checo. Bit of that. Barney, get in there. Fence him once, and that gives us a whole world of things to talk about and probably gives a win to somebody else. Come on, Checo. Get around it. Lift up, mate. We want you to stay there. We want you to be in the Red Bull next year, but to do that, you need to take the battle up to Maxi Verstappen. Checo, get around it, Checo. Not, said Checo far too much there. I apologize. Not, it's a not that there isn't around or current discussions that there could be around of the World Endurance Championship in Australia. The time is now, and the obvious venue is the Bend Motorsport Park. Imagine that event with all of those brands activating, Porsche, Ferrari, Lamborghini, Toyota. You put that on the long track at the Bend, you would get people rock up. It would be great. You could have Carrera Cup and or Sprint Challenge, Toyota Gazoo Racing 86 Series, SRO, GT3, GT4 as supports. Like that would be a properly outstanding, cool event. Somebody please make that happen. That would be terrific. And I say this with some trepidation, the president of the FIA is currently being investigated for getting in the way of manipulating a race result. I'm just going to leave it out there that the FIA have had not a great track record of being involved in race results, good or bad. I'll just leave it at that, but definitely a not. A big not, and anyone who has been or watched or understands the history of the Indianapolis 500 will get this. There's talk of guaranteed spots at the Indy 500.
No.
IndyCar is looking at introducing their version of a NASCAR charter or a supercars license, which is fine. I completely understand that. They need some certainty as a team to have a franchise, for lack of a better term, to compete in IndyCar racing. But part of that discussion is that the teams want that license, for lack of a better word, that franchise, to guarantee them a starting spot in the Indy 500. No way. Not a chance. The best stories of that race, especially the lead up, are of the big teams falling and failing to get in the show. Penske in 95, having blown everybody away with the Beast in 94, missed the show. Ray Hall missed the show. Andretti's have missed the show. Like, it is part of the Indy 500's 108-year history. No guaranteed spots. They went down this road before, and it was part of the reason why IndyCar split in two in the mid-1990s, because the promoter wanted the 25-8 rule, so 25 of their entries and only 8 of the card entries could get in to the race, and that's basically what helped split IndyCar racing in half, and something it still hasn't recovered from. No guaranteed spots at that race. The show and the theatre of getting in is everything to that race. So I'm massively against guaranteed spots there. That's a huge not, even just talk of it. That's just bad, Penske, bad. Not the NRL. While it was nice to have a I can't believe I just said that. I'm sorry, Roger, I really love you. while the NRL, well, it was nice of them to have their big doubleheader, I'd watched the start of that broadcast on Fox, actually, interestingly, just to see what it looked like. And it looked fantastic. And Allegiant Stadium's amazing and all that. But what they did do at the start there was a little frustrating, was that they rattled off a host of sports that had either just been in or were currently in Las Vegas. And they mentioned about how the NRL was actually going to be bigger than most of them, sans the Super Bowl. Pick the one sport that did not get a mention. It was
the one that had 120,000 people down the road, or
correct,
sold out the Grand Prix.
Correct.
Maybe.
Correct.
Yeah.
So once again, motorsport just misses out on factoring in the radar of the ball sports, which is just very frustrating. And yeah, there was a much bigger crowd up the road in Gale Force Winds, as it turns out, up at Las Vegas Motor Speedway than there was watching the National Rugby League's little Las Vegas experiment, but good on them. Anyway,
so I was reading the Batuta Advocate, and they say that the NFL fans are going to jump off en masse to follow NRL.
Oh, of course they are. Absolutely. Travis Kelce's doing a deal with the Manly Seagulls.
Seagulls, yeah.
Yeah, okay, good. Preemptive not. Still looking forward to people finding a way to complain about the Bathurst 6 Hour being live on both free to air and Fox and KO. It will happen because the internet. And my final knot is left to the AASA and Hyper Racer, who through some strange circumstance of, I imagine, doing what I do when I look for domain names, is snag a whole bunch of them all at once, is somehow, it seems like, apparently they've jagged the trademark to the Australian Drivers' Championship. And they have come out with a press release saying that the Hyper Racer series, if you don't know what it is, Google it. Cool cars, really good. Will run for the Australian Drivers' Championship this year. And if they've jagged the trademark somehow and Motorsport Australia has lost it, okay, that's fine. You can get a trademark. What you can't do is put out a press release and trade on the 67-year history of the Australian Drivers' Championship. Because while you got a trademark, you don't own any of that. So I'm very frustrated by the way that was put out. It felt quite very self-serving. They don't own that history. They don't own the efforts of Brabham, of Jones, of all the greats of Australian open wheel racing in the Australian Formula One era, in Formula 5000 racing for the Gold Star, Formula Holden, Formula 3. It's just so not related to that. So if you got a trademark, okay, fine. Use it, whatever. Don't like it. But if you're smart enough to get that, good on you. But don't link what you've got to the history of an award that has been awarded almost consistently, barring a little gap between 2015 and 2019, 2020. You can't trade on that history. That's not yours to trade on. That is owned by the Australian Drivers' Championship that actually has been and has created that history. So that really annoyed me, and quite disappointing as well. It felt like a quite cheap shot trading on that. So that would be my final knot for the week.
And a good one at that too, Mark.
I sort of noted this one down without knowing what you were going to say there. So this is with relevance to stuff on the racetalk.com. People who steal your hard work and pass it off as their own.
Yes.
Horrible for your karma, tisk, tisk, not. And also Alpine, who seemingly have not copied anyone's work or done any hard work of their own. You mentioned there how Ferrari have made incremental gains. I think Alpine have lost time to the tune of several business days by the looks of
things.
They're absolutely nowhere. I had down here the Formula One supercars paddock situation, garbage, rubbish, not.
Yep.
Cam Waters copped a bit of a spray for being nowhere at the Bathurst 500, but it turns out he had entirely crook guts over that weekend, was probably having a bit of a spray himself. So just finishing 500Ks at Bathurst for Cam was a pretty big effort in hindsight there. So we'll let that one pass. Hope you're feeling better, Cam.
Well, I think he let that one pass.
Lastly, from me, the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. Fun fact, it was designed, the circuit was designed by Alex Wurtz. And clearly, Alex Wurtz had a axe to grind with Formula One when he whipped out the French curbs and dreamt up that monstrosity. If you look up the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix on Wikipedia, most of the pages filed under the heading criticism. Now, going around corners is fun.
Look, that's good.
Carry on.
It's true. I'll look it up.
That is good.
Corners are great. And, you know, NASCAR, they've got one giant, great big corner and only goes in one direction. But the Jeddah circuit, 4 a.m. on a Sunday morning, is going to be garbage. There's not going to be an overtake. We couldn't have an overtake at Bahrain. We're not going to have one at Saudi Arabia. And, of course, that's just corners. So that's rubbish and something to not look forward to.
A late hot from me to Kia and their new commercial for their brand new ute. Have you seen that, guys?
I'm frankly disappointed it's not going to be called the Boonie.
Yes, but it's just excellent.
But
very good.
But, and opposing not to that, Chebex, if I can riff off what you're throwing down here, not one. So if you haven't seen the Kia ad, for context, they've got a whole bunch of Aussie sporting legends. So David Boone's in there and Steve Waugh's in there. They call it the plugger. Ash Barty, I think's there. Tremendous. Brilliant. Great ad. Very nicely done. This is for Kia's new ute, which is going to be called the Tasman, by the way.
The Tasman, is it?
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
Not one motor racing legend in there.
That's a good point.
Why not? Surely you'd call it the Brock or something like that, or at least put him in there as a hologram or something. I don't know, the Johnson?
You mean there's a hologram?
Well, I mean, he can't exactly appear naturally, can he? But surely you'd have a motor racing they call it the Brabham. Like, surely you'd have a motor racing legend in there as well.
Yeah, the Kia dick would have gone well.
It's a car, for crying out loud.
Wow.
So there's a knot to your heart. It's a good hot, though. It was a cracking television commercial.
It is a good ad. Guys, that wraps us up for the week. Just you two, if you can find someone to work with you next Tuesday, because I'll be in Thailand playing golf.
Oh, excellent. So breaking news.
Leave tomorrow evening and away for a week. So I won't be with you next week, but I'll be back the week after for the Grand Prix preview.
All right. We'll plug somebody else into the big chair.
Marvellous. I won't catch you next week. I'll catch you the week after. But thanks for joining us right here on The Grid.